إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدًا عبده ورسوله. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون. يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء، واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام، إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم، ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما. إن خير الكلام كلام الله عز وجل، وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وشر الأمور محدثاتها، وكل محدثة بدعة، وكل بدعة ضلالة، وكل ضلالة في النار. We continue inshaAllah ta'ala by his aid and permission with the remedies, the treatment against the forbidden gaze, against the unlawful look, and how with the will of the Almighty Lord we can eradicate, obliterate, break those devilish arrows. We have reached remedy number 9. One of the greatest remedies or treatments against the forbidden gaze is indeed marriage. As our beloved Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam mentioned in a narration collected by Muhammad ibn Ismail al-Bukhari and Muslim ibn Hijjaj on the authority of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu ta'ala anhu, that Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, O young men, whoever among you is able to marry, should marry, as it helps him lower his gaze and guards his modesty. And whoever among you is unable, then let him observe fast, as fast diminishes one's sexual desire. Muslim males and females are enjoined to marry. However, if one does not have the means to get married, this does not entitle him or her to fornicate. Rather, a believer, a Muslim, a muhsin, enjoins upon himself chastity. He perseveres patience. He seeks Allah's aid, assistance, and help against the accursed. For indeed, guarding one's chastity is one of the greatest trials, exams that the Almighty Lord has imposed upon man. And yes, it requires extreme discipline, extreme willpower, patience. But know, O believing servant of the Almighty Lord, that for he who succeeds, put that in your mind, for he or she who succeeds in avoiding fornication or adultery, your actions will not go in vain. Instead, the Almighty Lord has prepared forgiveness and a great reward for such a person. Careful considerations of the Quranic injunctions and the golden, authentic traditions of our beloved Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam clearly mention that it is compulsory for every single man to get married if he has the ability to pay dowry, to support his wife, is healthy, and for and last, if he fears that if he does not get married, he will fall prey to the evil, satanic whisper, and thus fall into destruction. Likewise, a lady who is unable to maintain herself and fears that her sexual urge will drive her into destruction, into fornication, then this obligates her to get married. Here there is no excuse. There is no exemption. You will fall into this category if this befits you, that which we mentioned. We ask the Almighty Lord to protect us, because procrastination towards marriage or prolonging marriage can ignite the fire of lust, can ignite the fire of instinct, of desire. And what happens then? That forbidden gaze can easily lead you to a destruction. So do not take the matter lightly. If you are able to get married, oh young man, oh young lady, do not wait till you finish your university. Do not wait till you finish your HSC. Do not wait till you finish your trade. No. Get married. Because prolonging or delaying or deferring or whatever your marriage due to some reason, worldly reason, could lead you to ultimate destruction in this world and thus the next. So do not take the matter lightly. Do not take the matter lightly. And it is haram for a parent in Islamic law to delay his son or daughter's marriage by claiming, oh, she has not finished, or he has not finished his prestige degree or his trade. He is not allowed to interfere with the child's marriage when the child needs to get married. And if he does so, then that responsibility is taken away from him and given to the next person who's considered her guardian. So we ask the Almighty Lord to make it easy for us and bless us with a righteous partner in order to be strongly encouraged towards the love of the Almighty Lord. Allahumma ameen. Allahumma ameen. Another great remedy, treatment to break the evil satanic arrow, is pondering over the ramifications of the unlawful look. How it can lead to destruction in the life of this world, and how it could lead to ultimate destruction in the next. And we have a beautiful story to relate to you. A story that was narrated by one of our pious predecessors, Rahmatullah alayhi, Wahab ibn Munabbah, who related a story of the people of the book. He said, there was a pious worshipper, a devout worshipper of the tribe of Israel. He was the most pious of his time. During his time, there were three brothers who had a sister, and the sister was a virgin. He continued, the three brothers wanted to adventure, leave the town, but their epic was for war. So they started thinking, with whom are we going to leave our sister? She's a virgin, she's young, she's attractive. Who can we leave her with? Who can we trust, in other words? They started thinking and thinking and thinking, until finally they all agreed to leave her with whom? The pious worshipper. Being the most pious of his people, you will not find a better person for this job. So they all trusted him. They approached him and asked, are we able to leave our sister with you? Did he say, yeah, great, not a problem, get her along. I've got a beautiful room, beautiful bed for her, ready. No, pious worshipper would not want this. He immediately said, no, I do not need this problem. I do not need this obstacle before my Lord. I am a worshipper and that is all I do. You bring her in my life, she's an obstacle. She's a problem between me and my Lord. So he refused their request. They persisted and persisted. Please, we have no one else but you. Please, can you take care of our sister? Until finally he agreed. On one condition, I've got my house of worship here. She does not live in my house. She gets placed in another house near my house. I don't want any interference, any disturbance from this creation. So they placed her in a house next to his place of worship. And she remained there for some time. Every single day, seen he is the caretaker now. He's got to cater for her. Every day he will make her food, place it on a tray, open his door, his house, his door, place it immediately in front of that door, close the door, lock it up, go back inside and worship therein. This is the way he did, how he worked. Now we all know Satan, أعوذ بالله منه نصر الله العافية. He attacks man how? Not immediately one ban, no. Step by step approach. Once he sees you're comfortable with one sin, one step, he will come and attack you with a sharper arrow, with a different step. So this satanic whisper, deceiving liar, this two-horned ugly beast, approached the devout worshipper softly. He was encouraging him, saying to him, you should take care of her. She's a young girl, young lady. It is not proper for you, he said, to allow her to come out of her house, go all the way to your house during the day, where men will look at her and they may come upon her. They may harm her. They may hurt her. It is not proper for you. You are a devout worshipper. You do not want her to be harmed. He whispered and whispered and whispered. The first arrow found its position in his heart. Step by step approach. At first, keep her far away from me. I don't want anything to do with her. I don't want to even see her. But now Satan has convinced him to take the food straight to her house and place it at the door of her house and run back home, lock the door and worship therein. This happened for some time. He kept doing this day after day, day after day, day after day. Who comes? He's still comfortable now. This first arrow has hit him. He's comfortable. He has no problem. He feels no negativeness. Nothing could run. Satan, his companion, comes back and says to him, if you were to take this tray and place it inside her house, yeah, she's got to open the door. She's got to expose herself and pick up the tray. Take it inside her house. It is more proper. There is more reward, he said, in doing so. Whisper, whisper, whisper. Arrow number two has found its place. He made her food, placed it on a tray, not in front of his door, nor in front of her door, but opened her door and placed it inside and ran back home, locked the door and worshipped therein. Arrow number two has found its position, its mark. He kept doing this for some time. He was comfortable. He was relaxed. And then his companion came back with a sharper arrow this time. See, every time he sharpens the arrows, the first arrow is weaker than the second arrow. The third arrow is sharper than the second arrow. And that's how it works. You know, when you go fishing, if you want to get a good fish, you don't put the small hooks, do you? You get the big hooks to get a big fish. Small hook's not going to work. The small hook is what's small. It'll get a small fish, small bream. I don't know much about fish, but I'm telling you, that's why I know it's small bream. But if you want a big fish, you want a shark, you get a big hook, and that'll get a big shark. So the arrows is getting stronger and sharper as it goes along. So now he's sharpening the third arrow. He treads slowly to this person, and he starts whispering to him. If you were to talk to her, just talk to her. The poor little thing is lonely. She's in a state of fear. She needs company. Needs company. Just talk to her. Just a bit of talk. Don't be long. Don't be. Just something basic. Whisper, whisper, whisper. What happened? Arrow number three found its mark. Courage in his what? His heart, making it darker and darker. You know when the rust hits, what happens? It eats the rest of the part of the whatever it hits. When cancer hits, what happens? It eats the body within slowly. And these arrows They're hitting his heart and they're slowly growing and growing and growing. Why? Because he's accepted the former arrows. Once the arrows are broken from the start, Satan's got no ability on you. But he's finding himself an easy catch. He's accepting his arrows. And he will continue. Talk to her for a while. That will put her to ease and comfort, he said to him. The whisper and the whisper, and thus the arrow hit his heart, and it grew darker and darker. So he took the food inside her house, ran back to his house, locked the door, did not worship, went to the top of his building. That was the condition, that he speaks to her only from the top of his building. So he calls out to her, "Ya fulana, I am speaking to you. Come out and speak to me, or from the window, or from the door." So this kept going for a while. It continued for a while. And when they felt comfortable with each other, Satan sharpened his fourth arrow. So he came back to this devout worshipper. This devout worshipper. You know what a devout worshipper is? He's a person that worships 24/7. Whether in his sleep, whether awake, whether he's eating or drinking, he's always worshiping. This is a devout worshipper. This is how he was like. But he's getting weaker and weaker and weaker because the arrows are finding their target. He comes back to him and says to him, "You know, you're talking to her from the top of the building. You gotta scream out. You gotta yell to her. Why? Why don't you come down to the bottom of the building, stand at your door, at your door. Don't come out to the street, at your door, while she stands at her door, and then talk." He was trying to put logic in him. Satanic logic. So the whisper was carrying on, the whisper. It hit him. The fourth arrow found its target, growing darker and darker and darker. He was comfortable with this. He started talking from his door while she came out at her door. "Ya fulana, marhaba, ahlo sahlan." He saw them comfortable. Now the shaitan comes back again, this deceiving liar, and attacks him with another sharp arrow, but sharper than the fourth arrow. This is number five. He said to him, "Why does she come from the door of your house? Go to her door. She can sit down at her door while you stand at her door and just talk to her there. There's no yelling involved. It's more mild. It's more comforting for her. You know, her salt is aura. She can be heard by people." The whisper carried on. The arrow found its mark. The heart is growing darker and darker and darker. And when it grows darker, what happens, Ya Mustafa? The faith is becoming lesser. And when the faith gets lesser and lesser, what happens then? You are subjected to any evil after that. Anything can happen to you. So he came from his door, went to her door. She sat there. He stayed there all day talking to this creature. And then when night fell, he went back home, locked the door, and worshipped therein. See, the thing behind this is, what did he do every time he left this sin that he committed? He went back home and worshipped whom? Allati wal Uzza, the cow, or Buddha? He worshipped Allah Ta'ala. And the shaitan could not bear or tolerate him worshipping the one that created him. So he's trying to lead him with the sharpest arrow. And the sharpest arrow is what? Committing shirk. Is he going to lead him to that? That is he. He found his position. Arrow number five has found its mark. The heart is growing darker. The faith is coming weaker. He's becoming less devout to his Lord. He's so comfortable talking to her on a daily basis. When night falls down, he goes back home and worships therein. The shaitan comes back to him. When he's talking to her this time, he adorns her. He beautifies her. He makes her look sparkling. That's what shaitan does. He sparkles, he adorns and beautifies the sin, the haram, especially ladies, so you can fall into the major predicament. So he beautified her, he adorned her. A word from him, a word from her. Tabarini, ya tabarini. Smile here and a smile there. Ya habibi, ya habibti. What happens then? He kissed her. He kissed her and ran back home. Astaghfirullah, what have I done? He locked the door and did he play his Nintendo? He worshipped therein. So he's still worshipping Allah Ta'ala regardless of what he's doing. These are sin, yes, but they're considered not as major as ultimate sin, which is shirk. So, when he felt comfortable with this, Shaitan returned to him and he beautified her more, he adorned her more, he made her look more appealing and more appealing and more appealing until the unthinkable, the detestable, distasteful, the immoral, the disgusting, scummy, filthy, abominated act of sexual intercourse partook. That is destruction. That is destruction. He got her pregnant and she had given birth, or she gave birth to his baby boy. He ran back home, locked his door, what have I done? And worshipped therein. He's still a believer in Allah Ta'ala. Even despite he did what he did, but he still believes in the Lord Almighty. Satan comes to him. What have you done? Do you realize what sin you have committed? Satan whispering now. Do you realize that if her brothers come now and see that she has given birth to your son, what they will do to you? He thought and thought and thought. Satan said to him, you have to kill that child. You have to kill that child in order to conceal the affair. He said, yes, that makes logic. And then immediately came back and said, hold on. Do you think she is going to conceal the affair with you from her brothers? Do you think she's going to hide it? Do you think she's going to hide what you did to her child? Kill her too. Kill her, kill the child, throw them in a ditch. And conceal the affair. He accepted the whisper. He killed her. He killed the child. He threw them in a ditch, leveled the ground, put a rock over that, and he went back home, locked his door, and worshipped therein. Didn't play PlayStation. Worshipped therein. That was arrow number 7. Now, some time went past. The brothers come back. They came back from war. Immediately they went to the house of the pious worshipper. Where's our sister? He mourned her death. He cried and sobbed. She was the best of ladies, he said. She was the best of ladies. She got sick, and that is her grave. Putting his head down and crying, as though he had nothing to do with the matter whatsoever. Totally innocent. He walked away, the brothers went over the grave, started crying, sought Allah's mercy and forgiveness for her. They stayed there days and days until they got tired, went back home and slept. Is the matter over? No, it's not over. He's still worshipping Allah Ta'ala. He will not stop attacking, invading this person until he destroys him. Yes, it's a major catastrophe, devastation, but it's not the ultimate sin. So, this time Satan goes to whom? Goes to whom? To the dead? No, the dead is dead. Khalas. He cannot whisper to them no more. What they done, they did. Khalas. He went to the brothers, the three brothers. Starting with the eldest brother, disguised as a traveler. He came to him and said, in their dream, what happened to your sister? The oldest brother said exactly what the pious man had stated and how he had shown them her grave. Then Satan said, while I was dreaming, he is a liar. This pious man is a liar. He got her pregnant. She gave birth to his son. He killed them both and buried them both behind the door in the house she was staying to the right of the entrance. Then he went to the middle brother, told him exactly the same story. Then to the youngest brother, told him exactly the same story. All of them had the same dream. They woke up in the morning being surprised, extremely surprised and amazed by what they saw. They told each other and they were in a state of shock. The oldest brother said, It is only a dream. It's only a dream. Don't worry about it. It is only a dream. Don't worry about it. Ignore it. The youngest brother said, no, I will not ignore it until I investigate the matter for myself. I will not leave it until I go to that place I saw in my dream. So they all agreed to go together. They went there, entered the place where the sister was staying, searched for the place described to them in their dream. And after searching, yes, they found exactly where they were told, the grave of their sister and her son. They immediately went to him. While he was worshipping, they stopped him and said, what happened to our sister? He confirmed every single issue, point that happened to her sister as they saw in the dream. They grabbed him, placed him on a cross to crucify him. But before they can crucify him, see, he's still a believer, is he not? He's a believer still. Who comes to him? His companion. His good companion. His evil companion. Fa'ala. May Allah keep us far away from him. He comes to him and says, I'm your companion. I'm your companion. I am the one that tempted you of the lady until you fornicated with her, and then she became pregnant, and then she gave birth, and then you killed them and threw them in the ditch. No one can save you today except me. Yeah, the brothers now are getting ready to crucify him. No one can save you today, he said, except me. But I will not help you. Only after you do one thing. Belie in the Almighty Lord. Belie in your former, in your shaper, in the one that created you. Now, obviously this person is in a state of fear, scared. Extremely scared. So while in a state of fear, shivering, not knowing what's going on, he belied in his fashioner. He belied in Al-Malik Al-Quddus Al-Salam Al-Mu'min Al-Muhaymin Al-Jabbar Al-Mutakabbir. He belied in the one that blessed his limbs, who gave him his life, who all his life he prostrated to. But in the last second of his life, the last second, not a minute of a second, he belied in him. Thus everything becomes vain, nothing. That 1 second destroyed all of that worship. All of that worship. As soon as he relied in Allah Ta'ala, what did the shaitan do? Crucify the brothers? No! He does not care about his death, his well-being. He ran like a swift wind. He ran from him. As the ayah says, كَمَثَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ إِذْ قَالَ لِلْإِنسَانِ اكْفُرْ فَلَمَّا كَفَرَ قَالَ إِنِّي بَرِيءٌ مِنْكَ إِنِّي أَخَافُ اللَّهِ رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. The likeness of the devil. He says to man, disbelieve, disbelieve, I will help you. But when he disbelieves, he will say, I am innocent from you. I fear Allah, Lord of mankind. So immediately when he belied his Lord, they crucified him. And that was his end. نسأل الله العافية. اللهم عنا من ذلك رب العالمين. As you can see, the step that Satan took with this person is a step-by-step approach. Small arrow, bigger, 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 until it destroyed him. An example of this is today, when you watch TV, you know what you're watching at first, when you first turn it on, when you first start watching TV, you may say, Astaghfirullah. So what do? You turn your face away from the television with that instinct inside you, I am disobeying Allah Ta'ala. You see something haram on that evil screen, half-dressed lady, naked lady, you say, Astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah, what makes you watch it anyway? But you say, Astaghfirullah, that's at first. And what happens after that? When you watch and watch and watch and watch and watch and watch, you become desensitized. You become immune. Oh, it's only a lady. There's no more Astaghfirullah. It's Tabarakallah. So it changes. Your mentality changes. Your thoughts change. Why? Did you not know? Because Satan has approached you and you've accepted him? Why? Because Satan has already struck you with that arrow and it's found its mark, but you do not even realize it. We have become so accustomed to immorality, to indecency and obscenity, that we don't think no more. It's become a norm to us. Brothers and sisters, before you enter or you step into the theater, the movie theater, or a social function, or before you flip through the pages of the magazine or newspaper, or before you surf the net, or gaze upon the billboard or the posters, before you do any of that, or before you sit at night, as we all do, spend our evening on that satanic screen, ask yourself, am I going beyond the limits? Am I allowed to see this? Am I really in the hadood of Allah Ta'ala, the boundaries? Does He like this? Does He want me to see this? Is He accepting of this? If you do not ask yourself, nor do you care, you have been eaten and eaten by that Satan. The arrows are getting bigger and bigger, and you do not even realize. An example, which is a gross example, which was mentioned by our beloved brother Talal. He mentioned to me once, it is like the toilet, where if you are waiting for the toilet, someone's in the toilet, someone's before you, and they're doing their major job. It's gross, but it's very, very, very logical. Someone's waiting for the toilet. He's doing a major job. He can smell it from outside, to be more precise. And then he leaves the toilet. So when you enter the toilet, your hand is on the nose. You cannot bear the smell. You cannot stand the smell. You have to vomit, but you still got to do your job. So slowly and slowly, while in that disgusting smell, what do? Becomes, it's not bad after all. You become immune. It desensitizes you. Wallahi, it's true. It becomes a norm, does it not? Becomes something, okay, not a problem. I can bear it now. But when you first initiated it, A'udhu billah, it's like an earthquake. But then slowly you become immune. This is exactly the same example of sin. Slowly, slowly, slowly you become immune to the surrounding that you are living in. Just like work, for example. How many of us go to work? At first, when he first started his job, he knows it's haram. He knows it's haram to mix with this lady, to touch this lady, to continuously look at this lady and talk to this lady. He knows it's haram. So he fears Allah Ta'ala. He's got some feeling there. But the more, becomes not a problem anymore. It becomes easy. The environment that we are living in, you go outside today, you go to any shopping complex, if you're a believer, you cannot leave your eyes looking upwards. If you're a believer, you'll be too scared to look upwards because there's nothing there but evil. But when you continuously do it and continuously do it, it's like big deal. There's no more sort of concern. You don't care no more. This is a major, major problem. Wallahi, a major problem. But only those who think, who reflect, understand this. Realize, the beloved, that Allah Ta'ala is watching you, seeing you, hearing you. The ramifications is extremely dangerous of the forbidden gaze. We know in a hadith collected by Bukhari that in the hereafter, when Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam ascended to the heavens, he accompanied whom? Jibreel and Mikael. He said, we went along until we got to a pit that looked like an oven, out of which we heard cries and screams from. So we approached this oven or this pit, glanced inside it, and we saw naked men and women who screamed when the flames from the below raised up high and touched them. And it took them up and up until they almost fell from this pit. But then it subdued the flame and they went back down. He said, Ya Jibreel, who are these people who are going through this tormentation? He said, these are people who used to fornicate, commit adultery in the life of this world.
Today, sex is portrayed in various forms, whether it's on your TV or the cinema or the magazine or newspaper or on the net. Look at the billboards, look at the posters, where images of sexuality is beyond control. Beyond control. There's no word for it. Sex has become a topic where advertisers, marketers are doing what? Are using most effectively to sell their product. It's a market. Lady has become, the woman has become merchandise. They are played with and sold as man pleases. And they call this liberation. And this is corruption. Whenever you go between men, what do you hear? Conversations about sex. That's all you hear. When you go to the hair salon to get a haircut, the first thing you see in front of you is what? Magazines. And many times pornographic magazines. You can't even go into the service station, wallahi, without putting your head down today. Because as soon as you enter the service station, ban! A'udhu billah! It's like, that's all they care about. And this is one of the minor signs of the hour. One of the minor signs of the hour. We are being extremely trialed, examined here. Wake up. Reflect. Ponder. Contemplate, am I doing that which Allah is pleased with or not? And this leads to what? It conjures what? Promiscuity, fornication and adultery, lewdness. It leads to rape in teenage pregnancy. It leads to all sexually transmitted filthy diseases. This is what it leads to. Today we have reached a stage where man, or through effective marketing we can say, man, individuals in society are justifying everything they do as sexual liberation. And modern times, as you all know, consider premarital sex as a trend, as a fashion. Where 15 years ago, if not less, premarital sex was abhorrent. It was the unthinkable. It was immoral. It was evil. It was filth. It was illegal in the Western society. No one even talk about it. They were too scared to talk about it then. Now it's not like that. Look at the media. It creates the impression of what? That premarital sex is fashionable. That homosexuality is beautiful. It's a trend. And anything that goes against that is old-fashioned. A typical example of this is that when you watch a few episodes of that devil, primetime soap opera, let us say, on TV, the impression they give you, just a few, not 5, 6, 7, 8, one or two episodes, they immediately give you the impression that adultery is beautiful, allowable, that premarital sex is fashionable, that deceit, trickery, lies, deception, manipulation are most essential to get the man of your life or the lady of your life, no matter what the cost of harm, hurt, suffering others go through. They call it sexual liberation. If this is liberation, if this is democracy, if this is freedom, so why do we have so many examples of the following scenarios? HIV, for example. How many young adults are infected with this virus at alarming rates? At alarming rates. Wallahi, they're too scared to even mention it on television these days. It's so high, there's no use no more. It's beyond control. Beyond control. It has reached HIV or AIDS epidemic proportions worldwide. Mainly targeting whom? Teenagers and young adults. If it's called sexual liberation, then why are girls from the age of 10 to 15 years old, having sex? Thus, devastation, catastrophic consequence partakes. And when asked about the situation, why at 12 years old you're having sex, what did she say? No one told me it's wrong. And no one told her it's wrong. If she walks outside, she sees it. The TV's on, she hears it. She walks to it. She sits on it. Everything today is related around this. How is that poor child going to know? Those who have daughters, who have sons, beware, beware, beware. your son, your child may fall into this predicament. And thus you say teenage pregnancy, phenomenal these days. And many of them abort their child. But the consequence, it leads this abortion for this child. It's like a child being pregnant with a child. That's what it is. A child being pregnant with a child, not an adult with a child, but a child with a child. And what happens then? It leads to emotional, to physical, to mental, to psychological disturbance. It scars the person for life. How many men or women are being divorced or getting divorced due to an adulterous relationship? How many females from the age of 2 to 80 years old are being raped? This is sexual liberation now. They claim it to be sexual liberation. All these dilemmas, and they call it sexual liberation. Homosexuality is in the increase. Every day you see them with new rights, new laws. Everything's being legalized, even gay marriages. You walk anywhere in the world, great, if you're against it, you're old-fashioned and you're fought. The issue of sexual liberation is in fact enslaving those very people who are trying to free themselves from sexual liberation. It itself, in other words, is enslaving them. The sexual liberators are being shackled, chained in the chains of what? Disease, divorce, dissatisfaction, discontent, deceit, deception, double standards, evil, wickedness, and their lives become such. This is those who claim to be on the path of sexual liberation. And this is why we see individuals, organizations, or even governments today searching, actively working to find solutions, to find a cure for this wave of immorality, followed with its truckloads of problems. The answer is there. The answer is there for this dilemma and for every other dilemma. What is the answer? The answer, the solution, the cure, the remedy, the treatment for every perplexing social problem is one. ISLAM. No other. No other. This will give them ultimate treatment. The cure. A word that is so cheap, so easy. You know, it's not going to cost you billions of dollars to get this remedy. It's for free. Allah is giving it to you. He's giving you salvation from all evil in this world and the next. Islam is your solution, is your remedy, is your treatment. O person who works day and night, who is indulged in the abyss of life and materialism, Islam is your solution. Follow your deen and you'll be comfortable in what you do. Islam gives you the solution for every single dilemma that exists on the face of this earth. Nothing else but Islam. From fornication is what? The forbidden gaze. Don't look, and wallahi, you will not find yourself in that problem. That forbidden gaze can destroy you, brothers and sisters. Wallahi, it can destroy you. As one shaykh, I've mentioned this to the brothers before, one shaykh, a scholar who was the imam of Masjid al-Haram in Medina, he, when he left his apartment to go to stand in the mihrab, in the chamber of al-Haram, he would always put his eyes towards the floor. As he walked from his apartment, approximately 50 meter walk to the Haram itself, he would walk with his gaze towards the ground, knowing that if he looked up, astaghfirullah. And these are veiled ladies. These are veiled ladies. But maybe their eyes are unveiled. Maybe her face is unveiled because a lot of tourists there. So this sheikh would look down and walk directly like that. I used to accompany the sheikh every now and then. He said to me one time, I fall into destruction one day. I go, how are you, sheikh? He goes to me, one day I just raised my head and glanced at a lady who was unveiled, only in the face. And that hurt me and harmed me for 3 weeks. I could not do anything good for 3 weeks. 3 weeks he was affected by one single gaze. And that was only the face. Because he has iman. He has faith in the Almighty Lord. He believes in Allah Ta'ala. And that affected him. We don't get affected at all. We look and look and look and look and say more. And now we say to ourselves, we ask ourselves, why is our worship, our iman so low? Why is our acts of worship so weak? Why are we so de-minimized Islamically? Why? Ask yourself. Ask yourself. The more you adopt Sharia, the more you adopt iman, the more you adopt that which is obligated and avoid that which is haram, the more faith that you will get. And it's a guarantee from the one that created you. Think, reflect and ponder, dear beloved brothers and sisters. The matter is in your hands after the Almighty Lord. It is up to you, not up to your neighbor, your father, your mother, or son or daughter. It is up to you. Reflect, take a minute. Ask yourself, is this action going to be against me or for me?